For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get no doubt.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey. Mark McCloskey on fire. News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1. You can catch me on my X feed, formerly known as Twitter. You can catch me on Rumble at Mark McCloskey on fire. You can catch me on my Facebook page. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this world is going to heck in a handbasket. The United States has got no border security. More people are coming over every year than the metropolitan population of the city of St. Louis, where I live, and in fact, the state of Missouri. And you know, it's completely out of control. The cities are overrun. You got poor New York City with 8,400,000 people complaining about the immigrants that have been sent to them by Governor Abbott and how they can't handle it, how it's going to cost them $12 billion a year to handle it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is a crisis created by the leftist Democrats intentionally to undermine the security of the United States, to undermine the economy of the United States, and to create a million plus horde of what they hope are dependent Democrat voters. What we have as our special guest today, Mr. Tom Homan, the former acting director of ICE, an interesting gentleman who had a handle on the border and has some personal experiences that made controlling immigration to control safety and to save lives the primary point of his long career in border enforcement. So welcome to the program, Tom.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, you've been vilified in the press, and I remember back when you were the acting director that you were called a Nazi and, a xenophobe and all these kinds of things. And I thought a nice way to start today would be to have you talk a little bit, first of all, about your background. I know your dad was a cop, your granddad was a cop. You grew up in a little town like Mayberry up in upstate New York. But can you give the folks just a little bit of a flavor of your background?
Yeah, I did grow up. I grew up in a small town farming community, about 2,500. And you're right. My dad was a cop. My grandfather's a cop. I knew I was going to be a cop. And my parents had seven kids. And my brother's a fireman. I was a cop. And all of my sisters are nurses. So I think my dad raised a family that we all chose to serve our communities in one way or the other. But I grew up right outside of Fort Drum, New York. On weekends, used to go and shine boots at the BX for 50 cents a pair. And I milked cows. My parents didn't give me an allowance. I want an allowance. I had to go milk cows and earn the money or go down and shine boots at Fort Drum. That's how I made my money. But I was police officer in New York. Then I became a border patrol agent in 1984. And I climbed the ladder from then. I climbed the ladders one step at a time, didn't miss a rung. So I spent 34 and a half years. And President Trump came in office and made me the ICE director, which I was the first ICE director in the history of the agency that came up through the ranks. Yeah. It wasn't a political appointee. I was, I spent decades doing the job. So for once, I had an ICE director who actually did the job. So I had 20,000 men and women that worked for me. I didn't ask them to do anything that I didn't do myself as an agent coming up through the ranks. And our morale was at the highest level ever in the history of the agency because we had a president that let us do our job. Yeah. We had a president that allowed me to let my agents do their job. And everybody knows, we created the most secure border in my lifetime. Illegal migration was at a 45-year low. Illegal migration was decreased 83 to 90% under President Trump's leadership. Then Joe Biden came in office and intentionally unsecured a border, which is the first president in history of this nation who came in office and unsecured a border on purpose.
Yeah, and then you've got people like Nancy Pelosi and everybody else telling people how to avoid being arrested by ICE, how to avoid the warrants being issued on them for their deportation in violation of United States law. It's what, 8 U.S.C. 1325 that prohibits illegal immigration. And you've got the Speaker of the House of Representatives encouraging the breaking of that law.
You got a lot of congressmen up there that encourage it. And, I was vice director. I had numerous death threats. My family had death threats. I had 21 U.S. Marshals assigned around my home with my family. And I remember, and you're right, I testified in front of Congress numerous times. I had congressmen, of course, Democrats, said I was a bigot and I was a racist. And it's incredible that, you know, that they would do that in the middle of an official hearing. And my comeback to them was, well, if I'm a racist for enforcing immigration law, what's that make you? You wrote the law.
Yeah.
I'm not making it up. I'm doing what the law says for me to do and the law that you enacted and a president signed. And I take no apology for it. Under President Trump, which they won't talk about, is 91% of everybody we arrested had a criminal conviction. So we prioritized the public safety threats first, but nobody was off the table. If you're in a country legally, there's no prerequisite that says you got to go commit yet another crime to be a target of ICE. And yeah, under President Trump, nobody was off the table. We enforced the law the way the law was supposed to be enforced. And that's why illegal immigration was at a 45-year low, because there was consequences. You break the law, there was consequences.
Well, you know, and you seem very passionate about it. And I'm going to take my audience back to, what, May 13th of 2003 in Victoria, Texas, and maybe let you explain a little bit to our audience about how your passion got started.
Well, you're right. I mean, I was always a law enforcement guy, but I was in Dallas, Texas, giving a speech to International Chiefs of Police. And I got contacted by ICE headquarters asking me to hop on an Air Marine flight, get down to Victoria, Texas, because there's a crime scene there. They wanted me to run the investigation. The director at the time was Mike Garcia, and he knew I was in headquarters on detail. He knew I spent most of my career investigating criminal organizations that smuggle people, smuggle drugs, smuggle, you know, and trafficking and women and children. So he says, this is obvious a smuggling incident gone bad, so let me go down and run the investigation as the headquarters lead. So Air Marine took me down there, and when we landed, helicopter took us to the crime scene. And when I landed there, I was walked through the crime scene by a Texas Ranger and I think the sheriff. And, you know, as I said earlier, I was a kid growing up in town with 2,500, grew up milking cows. Now, fast forward, I'm standing in back of a tractor trailer with 19 dead migrants at my feet. When I walked up the crime scene, there's three or four on the ground outside the trailer, because the people rushed to get some relief, get some air, and some of the dead bodies were pushed off into the ground. But I remember standing in back of the tractor trailer and looking in, and seeing all these dead migrants, most of them in their underwear, because they're stripping down to get some relief from the heat. Now, reminder, they're in a steel box, totally black. The temperature's got over 170 to 180 degrees. And it was so packed, people were dying standing up. There was no place to fall down. And so I'm looking back tractor trailer, and I see all these dead migrants, including a little boy. That my eyes keyed on a little boy. I remember he was wearing Batman underwear, and it broke my heart. I mean, when I hopped up into the back of the truck, walked the crime scene, and when the crime scene photographer got there, he was shocked. He was surprised that I wouldn't follow the normal category of quadrant photographs. I told him we're going to do the boy last, and it wasn't because that was the right thing to do investigative wise. Is that I couldn't handle it. It shocked me. I had a 5-year-old son at the time. Every time I looked at that little boy, I knew, based on my years of smuggling investigations, I knew what his last hour of life was like. I knew what that little boy went through. He baked to death. And my heart just went out to him. And so I couldn't handle that right at the time. So I told the photographer, we're going to start in the back and work our way up front. And we finally got to the child. And I knelt down beside him. And I put my hand down and said a prayer for him, because I knew what he went through. And, you know, I can now tell the story without crying. It took me years to tell it, because I've had nightmares about it. I've actually, I was on the ground there for like a month. My wife had to send clothes out to me, because I showed up just a suit I was wearing. And I spent a month out there with a team of investigators. We ended up putting all 14 people in jail, including the driver of the tractor trailer, who just refused to give these people food, water, or air.
Mm. All for what, $7,500?
And I'll be honest with you, when we put those 14 people away, I got back to a headquarters, and I had to go get help. because I couldn't sleep. Every time I fell asleep, I pictured that little boy and what he went through. Yeah. And what bothered me after, the reason I got so affected by this, because through the investigation, not only did I know what this child went through, but talking to the surviving witnesses, hearing how this little boy begged his dad to not let him die. This little boy knew he was dying. He begged his dad, "I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I want to see my sister. I want to see my mom. Please, Dad, don't let me die." No five-year-old should ever utter those words. He was murdered. And people say, well, that's a strong word. No, he was murdered. The driver of that tractor trailer knew. They were pounding on the walls. They were breaking out headlights, trying to get some sort of relief. He didn't open that door and save him for one reason, because he would be found out. He would probably get arrested and go to jail. He didn't care. So after hearing the witnesses and what they said, and how some of the other migrants threatened to tear some of the limbs off the boy and put them out the openings of the brake lights that they busted out, hoping to draw attention to the plate, what that little boy went through and what his father went through, what his father went through. You got a little five-year-old son begging his father to save him. His father can't save him. His father put him in that position. And learn a lot, steel box. No one can help him. So I actually had to get some help and talk to people, and I got better. But that incident changed me forever, and that's why I'm so emotional about this, because a secure border, what President Trump did, saves lives. And why I'm so passionate about this now is because when illegal immigration is down 83% less people are coming. Let's use this analogy. If 83% of cars are taken off the highway, would you have less highway deaths? Of course you would. So under President Trump, illegal immigration at a 45-year-old low, 83% down, most of the time, sometimes as high as 90. President Trump's policy, secure border, saved lives. Less children died, less people drowned in a river, less women were raped by the criminal cartels, because Doctors Without Borders saves 31% of women that make their journey get raped. Less women that get raped, less children are dying, less migrants are dying, less fentanyl is in the United States. Less sex trafficking women and children's happening, less terrorists are crossing the border because the border is now vulnerable. President Trump's policy saved lives. And to be testified in front of Congress and tell me that I'm inhumane and I don't care about dying kids unless you're white and that, you know, I'm a racist. Everything we did in the Trump administration, I'm proud of. We secured the border at the highest level ever, and we saved thousands of lives. This administration, who claims they're humane, since Joe Biden's been in office, over 1,700 migrants have died on U.S. soil, an historic record. Over 100,000 Americans died of fentanyl that's come across the border, an historic record. They've arrested 264 people on terrorist watch lists, an historic record. They got the number of investigations by ICE and sex trafficking of women and children is at a historic record. Their policies are killing not only migrants, but Americans. They're not humane. When you make the promises to the most vulnerable people in the world, you can cross the border, you won't be detained, you'll be flown to the city of your choice, and we'll give you work authorization. When you make this type of promise, the world's going to come, and they're going to give the cartels every dollar they ever had in their life, and they're going to put themselves in the hands of criminal cartels to be smuggled. And that's when the women get raped. That's when people die. The cartels don't care about these people. Once they get the money, they're just cattle to them. So I push back hard on our administration being inhumane. We save lives, and the Biden administration's, their policies are killing people at record numbers.
Well, you know, and it just is shocking that to me, you know, you're a little younger than I am, I think, but I mean, back in the Vietnam era, there were protests in the streets day and night all over the country. Twice as many people die every year of fentanyl poisoning now as died in the entire Vietnam War. And where the hell is the outrage? How come this government, this administration, our legacy media can pretend that it's inhumane to secure the border when 100,000, 107,000 Americans are dying of fentanyl poisoning? Not to mention, what, 84,000 kids that just disappear into the system, become, what, human trafficked, become, you know, slave labor? I mean, how can the government turn a blind eye to that? It is absolutely criminal.
Yeah, you know, the left still, you know, beats up on us for what they call family separation, which was zero tolerance. And people need to understand that was an act to save lives. We knew 31% of women getting raped. We see people are dying. So you know what? It's against the law to enter the United States illegally. It's a crime. So let's prosecute those who enter illegally. And of course, you're a family unit, just like every U.S. citizen in this country. If an adult U.S. citizen gets arrested with a child, they're going to get separated. The child can't go to jail. The child goes to CPS and the parent goes to jail. But they want a different set of rules for illegal aliens. So we said, let's prosecute them. Maybe the numbers will slow. And they did. They dropped 25% within 2 weeks. The whole purpose of zero tolerance, which led to people being separated, was to save lives. Less women getting raped, less babies dying, hoping that mothers and fathers would not put their children in that position and suffer the consequences. At 2,500, we're still hearing about it. We're still, I'm still being sued over it. Yeah. And now we got this administration, as you said, almost 100,000 children that were in the care of the United States government were released to so-called sponsors, and they can't find them. Yeah. And I guarantee you they can't find them because they didn't vet them properly, because this administration, from day one, haven't did a single thing to slow the flow. Everything they've done, let's send more resources to the border, process quickly and release quickly, because if there's no overcrowding, we can claim the border secure. Can't have overcrowding. So the Secretary of HHS, Becerra, I heard him give a speech about a month ago bragging. We got a record. We just broke a record. We're releasing children at a quicker pace than it's ever been done by any administration. Yeah, because you're not properly vetting. Again, let's just care about the options. Let's not have overcrowding, but let's not vet properly to where these children are going. I guarantee you, based on my numerous trafficking investigations in my career, some of these children are in pornographic movies. Some of these children are living with pedophiles. Some of these children are being sold to sex child predators. And some of these children are in forced labor. And ICE already has 3 or 4 investigations in the meatpacking plants. They found children cleaning up entrails in a meatpacking plant on a midnight shift that couldn't be seen. Mm. So we already know they're forcing the traffic. We already know that they were trafficking in the United States. And on top of that, some of these children aren't really children. They claim to be 16, 17. They can be 20, 21. And let me tell you why. When I was ICE director, we did Operation Matador in Long Island. It was a gang operation. We arrested almost 500 gang members, most of them MS-13. Me and President Trump went up there for the press release. And we arrested those gang members. We found that about 40% of those gang members enter this country as an unaccompanied alien child. So besides releasing criminals into the United States, a lot of children are living a life of hell right now because this administration didn't do proper vetting. Under Trump administration, not only did thoroughly vet the sponsor or the parent, we vetted everybody in the household. We wanted to make sure there wasn't a pedophile living in the household, there wasn't a gang member living in the household. We spent a lot of money and time vetting people. Of course, we didn't have these kind of numbers because we actually shut the border down.
Well, let me ask you this. We got about 30 seconds left. In 30 seconds, tell us what we need to do right now if you were back the director of ICE.
You need to get Trump back in office. I promised President Trump, we talk often, that he comes back, I come back. And I'm going to run the biggest nationwide deportation operation in the history of this nation. These millions of people being released to the United States that don't qualify for asylum and get an order of relief, don't get comfortable. We're going to come look for you. President Trump's going to get back in, put the Remain in Mexico back in place, put the Third Safe Country Agreement back in place, and he's going to end catch and release, and we'll fix it. I told the president the other day, how long will it take us, Tom? 90 days, we'll lock the border down. 90 days.
All right. Well, Mr. Holman, I appreciate it. Keep up the passion, keep up the hard work, and I'm working hard to get Donald J. Trump reelected president, and when he does, we'll clean this mess up.
You got it.
Take
you
care.
You got my word.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Tom Holman, former acting director of ICE. Next, we're going to have Victor Avila, another Border Patrol agent who was ambushed, shot, his partner killed in Mexico, and still fighting to close a border, to make America more secure, and to raise awareness of how a secure border enhances the safety of both the immigrants and the American citizens. We'll be right back.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey. Mark McCloskey on Fire, News Talk STL, 101.9, 94.1. Once again, you can catch me on X, formerly known as Twitter, on Rumble, at Mark McCloskey on Fire, on my Facebook channel, on, of course, any place you get your podcasts. You know, we just had the former acting director of ICE on, Tom Holman. We now have another genuine hero and champion of border security, long-term border security agent, and now candidate for United States Congress from Texas, Mr. Victor Avila. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. Great to be with you.
Hey, you know, I saw on TV your opponent in the primary, Tony Gonzalez, down there on the border with Elon Musk. First of all, before I jump into anything else, you're primarying Mr. Gonzalez, true?
That's right. I was right there. I was standing right there. Of course, myself and there's other media, we all got pushed back, not allowed to get there, but I was there. I just got back this morning from Eagle Pass and spent the last 2 days there. And the irony of this, Mark, is that Rep Gonzalez is out there talking a good game about border security, but he's partly, if not responsible altogether, for making the mess that we're experiencing at the border. He solely, on his own, killed the best probably border security bill that I've seen in my lifetime, H.R. 29, and he killed it because he says, in his words, that it wouldn't allow people to come in here and seek asylum, which is completely untrue, and that he called it unchristian. Mm-hmm. What I saw yesterday and the last 2 days in Eagle Pass, that is not humanitarian. That is not compassion. Compassion is securing the border and saving lives and saving people and women from getting raped and drowning in the river and getting beaten and extorted and all these things by the cartels and the corrupt Mexican government. That's what you're supposed to, that's showing true compassion. But let me tell you, it is chaotic down there, Mark. In my 20 years, and I know you talked to Tom Holman, I've been working closely with him, Border 911, and I had never in my life have seen this, not in my professional life, not in my personal life, the lawlessness that we are experiencing in this country where our laws don't matter, our sovereignty, for that matter, is not being respected, first of all, by this administration and, of course, by 150 different countries abroad. It is unreal. And what I saw was a big conflict between the federal government and the state government. I never had that issue. I always work closely with our state and local partners. And this is not happening at the border. It is upside down and backwards. It is a twilight zone down there, really. And let me tell you, I came back very emotional, very all these mixed emotions. I'm angry. I'm upset. I'm confused. I don't understand it because I don't recognize our country, and I definitely don't like the direction that we're already in, not even going. We're already in, and not just the state of Texas, but the entire country.
Yeah, and you know, I was talking to Jeff Zink, if you know him, currently running for Congress in Arizona last night, and he was telling me the story about an 8-year-old girl that he was involved in discovering along with 3 other females where they found DNA from 67 different assailants in and on her, 8-year-old girl. And I mean,
there was a case. I'll tell you, there's a case of a 2-year-old in Eagle Pass, Texas. This was a little bit a while back, and that was brought over. The smuggler swam back to Mexico, and the little girl was rescued. She unfortunately had passed away and drowned in the river when he was bringing her. Well, they did an autopsy, and she had been violated, you know, sodomized, and all these horrific things that happened to this little girl. And this is the horror. This is the horror that is happening at the border, the dead bodies in the desert. And then, of course, you talk about the fentanyl and the drugs and the meth that continues to pour into this country because right now, as we speak, almost zero agents are actually working the line as a border patrol to patrol the border. They're all giving a secondary and all these different duties outside of the scope of their employment to facilitate and aid and abet the movement of people into our country.
Yeah, and the disappearing of almost 100,000 children into the country with no accountability, no record of where they are, no record of what they're doing, if they're in slave labor or child pornography or pedophilia, just disappeared. And, you know, my wife and I went down and did a border inspection back in 2021, I guess, starting in Roma, Texas, just watching unescorted kids brought into the country, loaded up on buses and taken to who know where, You know, if one kid gets kidnapped in you know, normal kid in St. Louis, he's on a milk carton. It's all over the press. There's a major K-Squad investigation. But here we are in the United States of America. 100,000 kids just disappeared, and nobody on the left seems to care.
Since February of 2021, 402,000 children, unaccompanied children, have come into this country. Think about that number, and you're right, about 100,000 of them are lost. And I'm a subject matter in human trafficking investigations and victim identification. I did this as a special agent with ICE, and it just boils my blood that we are allowing it. They're putting them on airplanes with escorted by men that are not their fathers. And if we can't come together just for that, the kids and the fentanyl that is killing our youth, then I don't know what else. This is, if you think about it, this is not a partisan issue. This is an American save lives issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but the left that made it very politicized. If I'm in favor of securing the border, I'm the bad guy for some reason. But we've gotten to a point here in our country that we better change this, because it is now, they've done so much damage that some of it might be unable to be fixed, or it's going to take a long time to do it.
Yeah. You know, when we were down there, we met with Maya Flores, and I was asking her, you know, her husband had been a Border Patrol agent for, I think, 18 years at that point.
Yeah.
And we asked, you know, what do you do? What does Border Patrol do to determine whether or not these kids are actually genetically related to the people that claim to be their relatives? And she said that under the Trump administration, they did some DNA testing, but now nothing, right?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And see, nothing. We had the DNA. Initially was the DNA. Then we went into rapid DNA testing where they get the results within an hour. And when that started happening, guess what? All these smugglers that were bringing children across, and a lot of them were being recycled, they started abandoning the children. And that word got out quick to the rest of the world. And then they stopped coming. They stopped bringing them because they knew that we were checking. None of that exists. As a matter of fact, it's so disheartening that there is absolutely no control at that border. And most of what I saw Italians yesterday. I saw Chinese nationals, mostly Venezuelans. But the Venezuelans the intel that I'm getting is a lot of these people from Venezuela are Chavistas, Hugo Chavez sympathizers that are communists.
Yeah.
They're bringing, they've been sent here on purpose to change our fabric of our country the way we know it. This is a serious threat to our national security and our public safety.
Well, you know, when you have millions of undocumented aliens coming in illegally, just being dispersed into the country, you know, without employment, without health care, without education, meaning that then the government has to supply those things. When they're all entering illegally, or, you know, when even Nancy Pelosi and the left were encouraging them and giving them advice on how to break the law and how to illegally immigrate, how can you have a country when you have no borders? How can you have a country when you have more illegal aliens coming into the country in a year than the population of a lot of the states in this country, including the state I live in, Missouri? Go ahead.
It is nuts. But let me tell you this, Mark. It's the response from a lot of these governments is we're going to treat and give the resources to the illegal aliens first. And they've forgotten about us Americans. In El Paso, Texas, where I was just last week, the city of El Paso purchased an abandoned elementary school to house illegal aliens, not for our veterans, not for our mentally ill and homeless Americans that need a lot of attention. No, for people from another part of the world. And this is where all these local governments, yes, are mostly led by Democrats. And it's happening on the border in Texas, in your state. Look at the mess in New York and Florida. Yesterday, I was just going down the line asking them where they're going. Every single state, Colorado, Florida, North Carolina, New York, California, every single corner. That you're right. All of a sudden, I told them, we don't have any more room. I was kind of first of all, we don't have room for you at the facilities. They're releasing them to the streets. You're not going to have a job. You're not going to, everything that you said, I was telling them, they don't care. They know that somehow, somewhere, a government is going to give them not only cash on a monthly basis, but the health care and everything else. And there's a lot of health problems. There's a lot of issues. The hospital in Maverick County, which is Eagle Pass, Texas, overrun by illegals. The locals can't get ER services in their own town because it's overrun by the illegals.
Here in St. Louis, where I'm broadcasting from, two blocks from the studio where I'm broadcasting at City Hall, there's a homeless tent encampment on the steps going up to City Hall of American citizens who don't have a place to live, don't have enough to eat, don't have any health care, don't have free government cell phones, aren't being put up in five-star hotels when illegal aliens are. And by the way, I've been to the airport in McAllen, Texas, having to go through the metal detectors and the screening and show my ID while the illegal aliens are bypassing all of that and getting on airplanes to be flown around the country. It is just sickening.
That is my biggest pet peeve. One of the first things I'll do as a congressman is stop that. How in the world can you get on a commercial airplane in 2023 without an identification? You and I can't do it. And I've questioned the TSA. I've challenged them because they tell me, hey, make sure you get your ID. But next to me is a row of 50 illegal aliens. And I've been facetious about it. I said, what are they going to do? What are they going to show you? They don't have an ID to put in the little machine. So why are you letting them through? Oh, they don't want to answer. They don't want to be challenged. They don't want to be questioned. And I understand it's not the local guy. It's the administration. It's the Secretary of Homeland Security. They're being ordered, just like the border agents being ordered to cut the barbed wire, to cut the serpentine wire on the border where I was just. I witnessed it myself. And I feel so bad for these border agents because they're getting a bad rap. But they don't want to lose their jobs. They need to feed their families, too. They're caught in a very difficult situation.
Oh, I know. I know. It's an intentional ploy on the part of the people running this country to undermine our security, our national heritage, and basically to try to create an artificial voter base of dependent, impoverished people. But let me do this. I've got about 3 minutes left, and I want you to tell the story about what happened in February of 2011 and the ongoing results of that.
Well, absolutely. Thank you. And I'll always share it and give a tribute to Special Agent Jaime Zapata, who we lost in the line of duty in Mexico. We were ambushed by Los Zetas cartel driving on a highway back to Mexico City on assignment. And we were shot up at over 100 rounds. Agent Zapata paid the ultimate sacrifice with his life and was killed next to me. I'm here talking to you by the grace of God after being shot three times. And so this is personal to me. I stared evil in its eye. These cartels are an imminent threat to our country. They're an imminent threat to our public safety. We know that they're the ones facilitating, with the help of China and Mexico, to kill us with counterfeit pills. DEA just upped the statistics. It started at six. Now it's 7 out of every 10 pills in this country is potentially laced with fentanyl or xylazine. I'm telling you, it's killing us. They don't need to take bullets to us. They're killing us with drugs, and no one's taking them out. And that's why I feel passionate about it. I've worked border security all my life, and it's affecting our economics. It's affecting every aspect of our lives. The border is not just illegal immigration. It encompasses a lot of foreign policy. Who's behind this? Iran, Cuba, China, they're the ones taking advantage. They know that if they're in Mexico, they're as good as being in the U.S., and we're doing nothing to stop that. At least this administration, we will change it in 2024, though.
All right. So I've got about 30 seconds left. Tell me in 30 seconds what you're going to do to fix this problem when you're elected to Congress.
You're going to see immediate changes, and a lot of it is just to go back and follow our law. That's the easy part, but it requires legislation. I'm going to change. I'm going to go after the NGOs. I'm going to go after the cartels. I'm going to go after the corruption that exists under this administration to give the people the power back. It's we the people. It's not we the administration or we anybody else. It's we the people. I'm going to give it back. You could help me do that at victoravilaforcongress.com. I do need your funds to help me get there.
All right. Well, Victor, we wish you the best of luck. We're doing everything we can to get Donald J. Trump elected president again. And with him as president and you in Congress, we're going to make some big changes in this country and bring our republic back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
And could you hold on? Now, we need to wait just a minute, this program, to make sure everything records before we let you go.
Uploads, correct.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. By the way, I've been watching some of your videos. I've been reading your book, Agent Under Fire, and You know, I wish you the best of luck. I know that Mr. Gonzalez, not only did he crush that immigration bill, he also voted for the red flag laws in the General Defense Act, what, 2 years ago.
And you know what he voted for this week? Days ago, he voted to keep drag shows and the Pride Month in our military. This guy's out of control.
Oh God. Yeah. Well, I hope, I sure as heck hope you win. You know, we did a library board meeting here. Library board meetings usually have a half a dozen people show up. But there were the library district in question had a guy in a pink tutu, fishnet stocking, 6-inch stilettos, and his bustier and his beard in the child section of the library running it. We had 350 people at a library board meeting. I mean, people are getting sick and tired of all this.
They are. Mark, I ask you to please share it with your network. Share it with the people that are willing to help us with their donations, because it is a battle, but we just need a little bit more to stay in the race.
All right, we'll put your website up on the screen, and we'll do everything we can to promote it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mark.
My pleasure. Thanks again.
I'll see you. Bye bye.
All right. Well, that was Victor Avila running for Congress, trying to unseat the rhino Tony Gonzalez in Texas. His district is about 800 miles of the border between us and Mexico. He's had personal experience. He got shot in the line of fire. He's a true patriot, and we need to do everything we can to have him win his primary down there and become the next congressman from Texas. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. News Talk STL, Mark McCloskey on fire.
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on fire on News Talk STL.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey on fire, and going to do my typical week in a review. But, you know, some of these things, you can't make this stuff up. But, you know, we now have the alleged budget crisis. We have the looming government lockdown, government shutdown, government doing what government does best, which is nothing, I hope. You have the concept that the dispute between the people on Speaker McCarthy's side that want to sign a bill with about $1,549 billion in the budget versus the evil conservative caucus that wants to have $1,450 some billion in spending the next budget. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's like saying if you're going to shoot yourself in the head with a 45 caliber pistol or a 9 caliber pistol, 9 millimeter, you're just as dead either way. Doesn't make any difference the size of the hole that goes in. If it's going to kill you, it's going to kill you. The real answer is to dramatically reduce the size of government. And, you know, I'm a staunch supporter of Donald Trump. I'm on the Trump team. But if Donald Trump wasn't going to be the next president, I'd like Vivek Ramaswamy, who wants to cut 75% of the entire federal government out. And I think that's about 25% short of the mark. But, you know, here's a fun little tidbit, right? Last week we were up in D.C. and happened to run into the now notorious George Santos, who's a congressman from New York, and George was nice enough to take us on a tour of the Capitol building. And while we were walking through the Capitol, he got buttonholed by a MSNBC reporter to talk about the Senator Menendez debacle. And you can see us in the background. And I said to myself, somebody's going to notice Patty and me in the background there, and there's going to be a big brouhaha. And sure enough, the left-wing press, there was all kinds of people on the internet saying, who are those people? Oh, those are those McCloskeys. What are the McCloskeys doing in the Capitol with George Santos? Well, you know, taking a nice little tour. And by the way, George is a history and politics buff, and he taught us an awful lot about the Capitol and the history of the building that we had never known before. So once again, thanks, George, for doing that. And thanks, you left-wing fanatics, for finding something sinister in it all. So what else we got? We got Dianne Feinstein passed away. Well, you know, one less Democrat. I guess I shouldn't be rude. But think about it, right? I'm an equal opportunity offender of protocol and niceties. You had Dianne Feinstein voting in the Senate when she didn't know what her name was, she didn't know where she was, and she had to be told how she was supposed to vote and what she was supposed to say, and then actually, like the Ouija board, moved her hand across the voting machines to make sure she pushed the right button. A United States senator, one of allegedly the 100 best and the brightest people in the world. But I can give you two more best and the brightest. How about Senator Fetterman, right? The Senator Bigfoot, as we call him. And here he is. They abolished the dress code just so the brain-injured slob can come in dressed in his shorts and his hoodie. And that lasted, about a week, until they decided that even the Senate can't put up the amount of disrespect and degradation they would be exposed to by having one more senator who not only can't speak, who can't form sentences, that doesn't have a thought in his heavily damaged brain, but they can't have him. They can have him be in there and vote as long as he votes Democrat, but by God, he better wear a suit and tie while he's doing it, because he would actually look like the moron that he is if he came dressed in his shorts and his hoodie. But I'm a nonpartisan complainer of morons in the Senate, because we have Mitch McConnell. We have Senator, maybe I've got a brain, maybe I don't, maybe I'm really just an automaton, maybe I'm really an AI figment of your imagination, because when Senator Mitch McConnell does that phase linear break, it's like they just pulled his plug out, right? Like the computer turned off, like his feed went dead, and until they plugged him back in, they rebooted him. I mean, here you got, he's only 81, right? Age isn't an excuse for him. You got Senator Grassley that's 9 years older. Senator Grassley's 90 years old. He's still sharp as a tack. But, you know, when you've got three out of 100 senators who are obviously so mentally deficient, they could not possibly be sent out for sandwiches, it's a very sad state of affairs. But then, what is our state of affairs? Look at the Republican debate last week, right? You got seven people up there on stage all screaming at each other, shouting at each other, talking over each other, and you've got these alleged moderators who just let them do it. And you know why? It's easy enough to know why. Fox just wants ratings. And if they want to make a presidential debate look like an episode of the Jerry Springer Show, they'll do it if they think it'll get ratings. Well, you know, in retrospect, they got 9.5 million people, the lowest viewership of any Republican primary debate ever. And why? Because nobody cares, because a guy who's really going to be president wasn't there. And so what if they have a slugfest between all the backbenchers? None of those people are going to be president. None of those people are going to win the primaries. None of those people are going to get a chance to beat Joe Biden. And so let them embarrass themselves. But the whole process, this whole thing of these people bickering with each other, when Senator Scott is having a fight with Nikki Haley over the cost of her curtains, right? Are either one of those people fit to run the free world? I mean, Joe Biden obviously isn't, but to have a fight on national TV over how much money was spent on her curtains, like this is relevant, and you got him screaming at Vivek Ramaswamy and wouldn't let him answer questions, and then you've got my favorite, Mike Pence, who refuses to answer the questions he's asked. And then they turn his switch on, and he, like the robot that he is, well, I'm glad you asked that question. Here is my canned response, which I memorize to make sure that I seem entirely genuine when I deliver this response. Thank you very much for asking the question, because questions like that are important to the American people, and I thank you for asking me those questions. I mean, holy, you know what? You know, and then you got Ron DeSantis, and I like Ron DeSantis. He's done a great job as a governor of Florida. But think back to Mad Magazine and Alfred E. Newman, What me worry? Look at Ron DeSantis when he's being asked a question. He's got that little boy, I just pooped my pants look on his face with his ears sticking out to the side. He looks just, pull up any copy of Mad Magazine any time in the last 50 years. Look at any portrayal of Alfred E. Newman, and that's Ron DeSantis waiting for a question. I mean, are any of these people fit to be president of the United States? Can any of these people stand up against the swamp? Can any of these people stand up against the onslaught that they're going to face if they actually get elected and actually try to do something to save this republic? Well, you know, I don't think so. But then we got the assault on Donald Trump that never, ever stops. We've got Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, who declares that the Trump Organization and Donald Trump defrauded banks and defrauded insurance companies. Of course, the banks don't think so. The banks were happy to loan Donald Trump and Trump Enterprises money, and he paid them back with interest. So they made money. Same with the insurance companies. Same with everybody else. But no, it's not good enough for Letitia James, because she got her job specifically to damage Donald Trump if she could. Same thing with Fannie Willis down in Georgia. Same thing with Alvin Bragg in New York City. Their goal, their reason for existing as elected politicians, is to destroy Donald Trump. Well, you know, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, declared that he is going to appoint somebody to replace Dianne Feinstein, and he says it's going to be a female and a black. Of course, that's unconstitutional, because in the United States of America, with our 14th Amendment, you can't give preferences based on sex or race. And so Governor Newsom has declared that he's going to engage in an unconstitutional act in appointing a new senator. But, you know, Letitia James, Fannie Willis can both, you know, qualify for that job being black women. And Alvin Bragg, all he has to do is identify as a woman. All he has to do is say, I'm feeling girly today. And he can qualify as well. So you got three out of three of these people that ought to move to California, get the hell out of where they are, drop their bull against the president, and ask Gavin Newsom for a new job. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again next Sunday evening.
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.